The Last Kids on Earth and their superhero alter egos are back in the latest installment of the graphic novel spinoff series, The Last Comics on Earth, Too Many Villains. Jack, June, Quint, and Dirk face their biggest challenge yet, creating the sequel to their hit graphic novel in a mad dash, puzzle-filled race across Apocalyptia to stop the biggest evil plan in history. Hey, you know what the creators of Last Comics on Earth's evil plan is? Make me and my kids love these books. Seriously, my younger kid is a huge fan of both the Last Kids series and the Last Comic series.
It's true.
And now I'm hooked too. The whole team has created a delightful cast of characters with some fantastic kid-friendly art throughout that will appeal to readers of all ages. Buy your copy of The Last Comics on Earth in stores today. You can also visit lastkidsonearth.com to learn more. What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we are here with one of our favorite guys, Jamal Igle. Jamal, welcome.
Hi, guys.
Hi. Hey. So we should probably establish we're here at Baltimore Comic Con. We have been sitting across and staring at you the entire time.
And you guys have been very, very generous with both your time, your connectivity, and your food. So I appreciate it greatly.
We're a free candy podcast is what we are now.
Yeah, we start with the finger candy and then the podcast come later. What is the con experience like for you? I mean, obviously, we've seen it in action, but for anybody listening.
Well, it depends, honestly. Like, most of the time, especially, like, over, like, I would say, like, the last 5 or 6 years, I usually just go to conventions that invite me. So, like, the freight is paid and hotel and everything. And I try to make myself as available to the convention as possible. So if they want to put me on panels and have me doing signings and stuff like that, then, you know, I'm completely all for it, you know. So that's, I have fun with the conventions. I do, you know. It can be difficult. Like, it's a lot of travel, especially nowadays, you know, because I teach as well. So, but I do still enjoy it for the most part.
Yeah. I want to ask you a very weird logistical question,
sure.
But I was just moderating a panel where they were talking about a little bit like how you draw people into your booth.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things they were saying is, oh, it's very tough when, you know, your head is down and people are focusing. But as an artist, you got to do that. You got to be drawing. So how do you split those things? How do you get people to come over to your booth, but at the same time, you're focusing on your art?
That is the hardest part, actually. I mean, I think I'm pretty good at dividing my focus in that regard, where I am kind of keeping one eye on what's going on around me and drawing and talking to people at the same time. Because it's not really like a sales thing more than anything else. I'm basically a circus chimp behind a table. I am the performing monkey. So I have to be at least a little bit entertaining. And I don't know if I necessarily try to draw people to the table necessarily, because people, luckily, I've been doing this since dinosaurs roamed the earth, and a lot of people know who I am. And even if they're not that familiar with me, I have enough, you know, artwork and stuff on the table where they'll be walking by and be like, oh, hey, that's kind of good. Wait. You worked on Supergirl?
Yeah. That casual sneak up where suddenly you're like, oh, I'm actually a huge fan of you.
Yeah,
I just didn't realize
it's like, wait, oh, I didn't know you were black.
Yeah. Now, when you're drawing at the table, I've always wondered this, are you doing actual work or are you doing like commissions?
Oh, God, I can't do actual work at a convention. I need my space. My wife makes fun of me because we have friends of ours. Steve Ellis is a good friend of mine.
Yeah.
And he lives in Ithaca, New York.
Yeah.
We try to get up there as often as possible. I can't work around Steve. And I can't. I love Steve. Steve is the older brother that I never wanted. And I love him to death. But Steve and I, my wife calls him my girlfriend because we get together and all we do is talk, like, for the entire time, like, about everything. It starts with, like, comics, then it goes to politics, movies, music. Hey, what about that bird over there? That's really, so it's too much of a distraction for me. So, and when I'm working, I have to be there and focused. Maybe a little music's playing in the background. I'm usually listening to like a radio show or a podcast or something, but I'm concentrating on the work for the most part.
Wow.
Well, not to keep getting logistical about this, but so when you're taking commissions for a con like this, we're here for 3 days.
Right.
How many can you physically do? Do you do some beforehand? Are you doing them all here?
Oh, no. It's usually all here. Okay. And I think the most I will take in a single day is probably like 10, depending on, you know, like how, like if it's just like a head sketch or head and torso, if it's like a full figure. There have been times when I've only been able to take like one sketch, but it's like a double page spread of something, you know, something elaborate, you know, and I just kind of close the list and say I'm sorry, except for little kids. Like if the little kids want like a sketch or something, I'll like come in. I'll do like a quick, you know, a quick sketch for them.
What's
the
wildest commission you've gotten at a con?
At a con, I've got the. Well, there was a guy who used to have a cheerleader sketchbook that I did a sketch for. I don't think that was probably the wildest sketch request I ever had. Was early on in my career, and I was at a convention in Connecticut with Jimmy Palmiotti and Amanda Connor.
Bad influences,
yeah,
right there.
And there was a guy there who was wearing a red polo shirt, a yellow rain slicker, green shorts, and he was carrying around a photo binder filled with pictures of little boys dressed as Batman and Robin.
Weird.
I can't elaborate more than that.
Good. That's
just
good.
I wanted to call the police.
Yeah. Oh my God. Switching gears.
I have 5 follow-up
questions. I wanted to talk to you about your teaching.
Yes.
What do you really love about teaching? Is it's helping somebody else kind of find their kind of...
It's that partially. The other part, because last year was my first year teaching at School of Visual Arts.
Yeah.
And I teach second year principles of cartooning.
Cool.
And one of the things... two things happened. Having been a former SVA student back in the early 90s, when I went to SVA, it was a much more cutthroat affair. Like, we were literally told, the people on either side of you are your competition.
Oh,
kill them,
man,
before they kill you.
Yikes.
Wow. And the 90s were a crazy time.
Yeah, School of Violent Arts.
Exactly.
Anybody
else? But now, it's a much more collaborative spirit with the kids, and I really, really love that aspect of them just sharing with each other, sharing techniques, sharing ideas. The other thing was watching them rise to the challenge that I put in front of them through the entire semester, watching them grow and develop and really, some of them really, like, being unsure of what they wanted to do visually as comic book artists, as cartoonists, and then by the time they finished their project at the end of the year, just really flourishing. And I was blown away at like some of the growth that they made over a year.
That's awesome. Cool.
What are you working on right now? What should people be checking out?
Okay. All right. So I just finished doing Dudley Datchet and the Forever Machine with Scott Snyder over at Comixology.
Oh, nice.
And that'll be out in print relatively soon, I hope, from Dark Horse. So it's coming out through Dark Horse. And then I just finished the first of 2 issues for a new Wrong Earth series for Mahoy Comics. So the first one will be out in October. I just finished the pencils for that, and I start working on the pencils for issue 2, and that'll be out in December. And that's leading into a new Wrong Earth miniseries in 2024.
That's awesome.
When you're doing the Wrong Earth stuff, for anybody who doesn't know, it's sort of like there's a dark riff on a Batman and Robin-esque character, and there's a lighter riff on a Batman and Robin-esque character. So how do you embrace those two sides? How do you differentiate them?
A lot of it now, because in where they are in the storyline, they're together. Like, there's an entire team. They're like 6 heroes from 3 different universes. So a lot of it is visual. It's not just the body language of the characters, but I'm trying to incorporate with, like, the darker characters with Dragonfly and Stinger 2, who are from the dark Earth Omega, I'm trying to incorporate little bits of Jim Lee, a little bit of Greg Capullo, a little David Finch into their line work, but I'm also with, like, the Earth Alpha, with the Sunny characters, it's a much more cleaner look to those characters. You know, some characters have slightly harder edges, some are a little bit softer. In terms of the story that we're doing with the new runner series, We Can Be Heroes, which comes out in October, it's set on Earth Alpha, so everything is very much in that sort of pastiche Batman 66 kind of universe. It's much cleaner. You know, the storytelling is much more traditionally dynamic. The layouts are much more traditional comic book layouts that you would see in, like, you know, the 80s or even the 70s. You know, they're very much, you know, I pull out my, you know, Don Newton, Jim Aparo, you know, issues of Batman for that look, you know.
And do you, when you're doing both, do you jump back and forth or you just get on a jag?
Get on a jag. I mean, it really depends. I mean, with the previous series, when there were sections that were in different Earths, I would draw them in batches as if I were, like, on a movie set and we had a limited amount of time that we had to shoot, and if we had corresponding scenes, everything had to be done there.
Block shooting.
So, yes, exactly. Block shooting. Yes, exactly. So I find that is easier to manage. And the thing about it also is Tom's such a great writer that he makes it really, really easy. But at the same time, he's given me enough room and freedom in the story to play, which is always great. That's always, like, my best collaborators have always trusted me enough to be able to deliver without having to, like, over-explain things and giving me room to be myself.
I wanted to ask you about the Scott Snyder Comixology to Dark Horse pipeline, I guess you would call it. I mean, it's kind of par for the course that you're aiming for both digital and print these days, but since you are having these things that are going up online first, and then they're being collected in different forms for Dark Horse, I know, like, Barnstormers was 2 issues per issue, so it's oversized. Does that affect how you're tackling it at all?
No. The storytelling really much, pretty much stays the same. The only issue of Dudley Datsun that's oversized is issue 5. It's 40 pages. But everything else is just traditional 20-page comics for the most part. The format hasn't really changed. And, you know, but the, I'm so used, because we did the same thing with Molly Danger. Molly Danger came out digitally before it came out print. So the format doesn't really change for me. You know, the delivery method changes, obviously. The weight sometimes is excruciating because I feel like, at least at the moment, in certain aspects, digital has a much more limited audience as opposed to the traditional print audience with comics. But It's great to see people rediscover something that you're putting out into the world at the same time.
Awesome. Jamal, go ahead.
I was going to say, do you feel like you're finding it's a more limited audience on digital, but are you finding audience, like, in other parts of the world, or, like, are you reaching new people?
No, it's reaching new people. I think it's because, you know, again, you know, I've been working in comics for over 30 years. And my mind is probably still very much geared to the idea of print being the end result.
Right.
But digital allows these projects to exist in a way that is tangibly different for people. And it's evergreen in a different way than it is with print. Nothing ever truly gets deleted from being online. You know, digital can exist. It reduces the price barrier for a lot of books and comics and media in general that would be cost prohibitive for a lot of people. So I enjoy that idea of it as well. But at the same time, you know, I like reading stuff in print. I don't mind reading stuff on the computer, but I like holding books in my hand, too.
Of course.
Yeah. Jamal, thank you so much for coming on. Where can people check you out socially these days or otherwise?
Oh, I'm pretty much, mostly right now, I'm still on X. You can reach me on X.
You sound so sad.
I'm on Blue Sky. I finally got a Blue Sky invite, so I'm on Blue Sky. So, and just type in Jamal Igel in the Google, you will find me. I'm on Instagram, I'm on X, I'm on Blue Sky. Spoutable. I think I got a Threads.
Yeah.
I don't always update everything because, Lord, I do not have the time.
Yeah.
But I try to be as available. I'm still on Facebook. You can reach out to me on Facebook. I try to make it easy for people to find me.
Google Igel, as they
exactly.
say.
Exactly.
Google Igel.
That's what I always say, too. Thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, thanks for having me, guys.
Great to see you, man.
And if you'd like to support this podcast and all the podcasts we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Facebook and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about comics. Apple, Android, Spotify, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter, Comic Book Club Live on TikTok or Instagram, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast, and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the comic book shop. That blows your